This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Tough as Nails Season 2 is in the books, and it is time to talk about a new Tough as Nails champion here today on our Tough as Nails recap podcast. I'm at the finale of Season 2, and we are back one more time with our Savage crew. Of course, let's welcome in a woman who I'm sure could operate a jackhammer. Take out the wire cutters. Here is Jessica Lise. Jess, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. I'm ready to climb up to the top of this podcast, plant my tree, plant my flag, and top it out.
Yes. Okay. Well, that is what we will do. I did not know that about the Christmas tree.
I've never heard that either.
Yeah. Okay. Of course, here with us to talk about it all, give it up for Mike Bloom.
As a Jew, I take a little offense to the whole Christmas tree thing.
Yeah. Should they put a menorah up there also?
Can we represent all sects here at the top of the beams, people? Okay. Listen, Iron workers of so many different religions exist out there. I know that the Christmas tree sort of has gone more cultural than religious as of late, but I don't know if we need to necessarily only put the Christmas tree up there.
Mm-hmm. Could we call it like a non-sectarian evergreen shrubbery? Does that solve the problem, or are we still paying tribute to the dominant paradigm?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other section as well of that is the American flag. Is it now a custom that if you're not in America, do you use that country's flag?
Well, let's have any of our Canadian tough as nails listeners who work in the construction trade. So do you put a Canadian flag up on top of the building?
This sounds like an amazing race challenge. I'm like, all right, you must put the Christmas tree and the correct flag at the top of the beam.
Well, I mean, it already did seem like an amazing race challenge, because I'm sure there have been amazing race challenges that involve like someone is actually doing the work, but you're giving them hand signals to do the work. I feel like we've seen that several times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to talk about one final elimination challenge, our overtime, and our final three challenge, as Scott was crowned the winner of Tough as Nails Season 2. Job well done by Scott, who was able to beat out Zeus and Sarah to become the second Tough as Nails champion. It would have been great in another world to have had Murph there to hand off the title to Scott.
Should he have been in the truck at the top of the storage container?
Hey,
you have Scott, to carjack Murph.
Just want to congratulate you on your win. It was a really job well done.
It is interesting because I do feel like our two winners so far have some stuff in common, right? Like they are both in their 40s, which I find really fun. That I think if you look at the big three in CBS, I don't think you can necessarily point to many people over 40 who are winning those as of late. But also in sort of oppositional perspectives, you have Murph, who to your impression, Rob, was a bit more soft-spoken. And Scott, who he himself admits is a bit more like energetic and I think a more present persona. And so it is fun to watch, I think, the dichotomy of those personalities in our two winners.
And
here,
both have a fear of heights. And Scott was able to find his inner Murph. Now he finds his inner Murph once again.
Is that the thing now? When you go onto Tough as Nails, should you inorganically give yourself a fear of heights, knowing that that actually might give you the edge to win?
Or organically?
Or what if this is one of those things, like, you know how we say when a Survivor player returns for their next season, they play like the winner of the previous season? Is this one of those things you have to think about? What did the previous winner have to overcome and find something that you also have to overcome that's adjacent to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that is definitely going to help you or at least help them tell the story of the show. I think that I like that. And Mike, stop me if I'm wrong here. Both winners from Tough as Nails are both from Savage Crew. Am I right?
I'm checking the fact books. That is correct. Both winners are. Yes, so Savage Crew. I mean, this was a banner season for Savage Crew, right? They were looking to make good on the franchise.
An embarrassing season for Dirty Hands. Come on.
It was a tough season.
Dirty Hands. No team win. No Dirty Hands has ever won the Tough as Nails individual title. Come on, Dirty Hands.
Is it cursed?
Yeah. Well, in all two seasons, this is clearly, I think you have to have three to be a New York Times trend piece. So we will luckily have this opportunity because we got renewed for two more seasons.
Yes. Woo! Will Dirty Hands ever win the Tough as Nails individual title? That will be the story going into season three and four. And we're teasing, not embarrassing. A little gentle jab of Dirty Hands that I think that one day we will see a Dirty Hands member win Tough as Nails.
Yeah.
And they won't bear this stain for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm.
They'll cover it up with some nail gray paint.
I don't know. I'm very particular about where that paint goes, though. I mean, it does leave an interesting story, though, going into next season, because now it was sort of, well, Dirty Hands was able to squeak out the team victory in season one. Season two, I wouldn't say they got things served to them because it ended up coming down to a tiebreaker, but it was not necessarily the strongest finish for them. And now season three, now it's Dirty Hands that's looking for redemption. So that's what you want, I guess, if you're continuing these team names, right? You want like healthy back and forth rather than just like the Bad News Bears versus the New York Yankees every season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals.
Yes. That's an Amazing Race storyline.
Yeah. Spinning those beams on their fingers while that whistle song plays.
I mean, Dirty Hands does wear green.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, Scott, congratulations. I feel like when we look back at Scott's run overall in the season, incredibly dominant. I mean, especially comparing him to Murph, Murph had a real couple moments where he like really slipped up, right? Like all the great stuff that he brought in the very final challenge, Murph was slipping up near the end. He went into overtime.
Yeah.
He, you know, like barely made it out of that forklift challenge. So he was sort of limping going into the final. Scott, I don't think Scott ever finished out of like the top two in nearly any individual challenge. There really was like nothing he couldn't
missteps
do.
Missteps that he had, they were all like in the team portion of the game. I don't think that he was even close to the bottom in any of the individual contests. I mean, is the same true for Zeus and for Sarah, where were either of them either in an overtime at any point?
Zeus was at the in the very last one, which we can certainly talk about.
Sure. Again, before this episode. Yeah.
But Sarah was sort of in that position, right, where she was sort of just like coasting for a little while. I think she almost went into the bottom two in the fruit picking challenge. But then other than that, she just went like win, win, win with the individual challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just Sarah really came on strong at the end of Tough as Nails. And really, I thought like carried herself very well, even into the final competition. I talked about last season about how I just thought that the final challenge last season was like so impossible for even like Murph was like it was like a miracle that he was able to get through the challenge. But I felt like that did not seem like that Sarah was like at a disadvantage in the final challenge because of like just how much like sheer power it took to get through the final challenge.
I mean, no, it is better than last season, but I think there's still a long way to go. It still feels very much like you aren't testing toughness so much as you are testing brute strength.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really the same thing. I saw the nods to like there's a little bit of problem solving there. You have to you have to go across a balance beam, which I was like, now this is starting to look a little survivory. I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I think Phil was definitely getting his challenge description pattern. It was very Probstian.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's still a long way to go. I do think it was better, though.
Yeah, I would like to see maybe some sort of like a mental task incorporated into the final challenge, as opposed to it just being like, you know, break down the wall. Like, you know, there was a little bit of problem solving with like using the sledgehammer, but then, you know, cutting the fence, you know, carrying the traps, untying the rope. Like, it was a lot of like just like being physical with that final challenge.
What about this? What if we have something in the middle of it where you have to take a thing apart and like do the alternator thing, like take a car apart, pull the alternator out, and then put the alternator in a different car?
Hmm.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. We have plenty of room to do so. I mean, I do think to your point, Jess, it should be something like put something together.
Yeah.
Or take something apart. Like, even if it's, if you need to do the multi-stage thing, you could be like, well, put together this thing to get you to the next thing. It even could be like, I don't want to invoke the survivor example, but like what they do with the puzzle ladder rungs, right? Of like, oh, figure out which rung matches which, and then you'll be able to climb to the top. It did seem like, I think to your point, Jess, that I'm glad we got more tool tasks, for lack of a better term, that it was less like, hey, smash through this thing, break through this thing. But I think it should be noted that the final task was essentially Scott winning it at the jackhammer, which I think does require a lot of upper body strength. Mm-hmm. And then once he was through, it really was no looking back.
See, I thought that Scott really won the final challenge more on like that he was able to just cut the through the fence, no problem. I thought that seemed like the place where he picked, because I thought that while he got through the jackhammer first, it also seemed like that he was able to, like, he did not struggle with like getting his tool out with like digging through it, where it seemed like that Zeus and Sarah really struggled with like trying to pry the bolt cutter out of the cement.
I mean, that maybe that's what they're trying to do with the puzzle solving element of it. Like, maybe there is a technique to that. We did hear some talk about, do you start at the corners or do you start in the middle? And maybe knowing how to strategically get the cement off of it, maybe that is what they're trying to give us as far as cerebral mental toughness. But it didn't really translate. It did look like basically strong man with jackhammer gets jackhammer through the cement faster.
Yeah.
I am intrigued. So did they put three sets of bolt cutters in cement and then just waited for the block to dry?
So
I don't think I've ever heard of, okay, jackhammer this piece of concrete to get bolt cutters out of it.
I don't think that it was like cement all the way through. I feel like that maybe like the bolt cutters were like in like a pile of dirt, and then they did like cement over the dirt, because I feel like that if the thing was in like a solid block of cement, I'm not sure how you could like dig it out once you like broke the top of the cement.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's my guess.
Well, I think we did see some sort of like dirt-like substance when Sarah and Zeus were sort of digging through everything.
Either
right?
like dirt like, or sand, and then maybe they covered it with like basically like a layer of cement, and then you had to jackhammer
through
that.
Yeah, so it was like a cement Ferrero Rocher, right? There was like something on the inside there and a cement layer.
Yeah, and get the wire cutter treat inside. Yeah.
It's more like a Kinder Egg than a Ferrero Rocher.
Yeah, interesting. Which confection is more like this bolt cutter covered in cement, hard outer shell? I want to go back to the start of the episode, because I feel like that there was one big strategic decision that really sort of cast the die on the whole episode, which was Sarah had the advantage of that she came in first place last time. She got to pick her partner, which ultimately would help her with being able to do that task. But she also, this was akin to, I don't mean to always bring this back to Survivor, but in some ways it's sort of like, you know, who do you want to bring with you to the final three? And then, you know, who do you feel like that you want to send into the fire making challenge? But there was also still like, you have to win this task. Sarah chose Scott. Jess, any thoughts on that decision for Sarah?
Well, first of all, Rob, I think you'd be an idiot not to notice that this is similar to the Final Four fire making thing. So I think it's totally valid to bring it up here. But I thought this is a really elegant strategic thing they've inserted here.
Yeah.
Because you have to think about, well, who do I want to go up against? But if I don't pick the right person to go up against, you know, who could I knock out here? And if I don't pair with that person, there's a greater likelihood that if I win, they get knocked out. But I have to pick somebody with me that will help me win. And it's almost like a prisoner's dilemma thing. And I thought there's two ways you could go there. I think everyone's has to be seeing Scott as their biggest challenge because he's just so darn good at those individual challenges. He's clearly poised to win the whole thing at this point. So she could try to send him to the bottom with somebody. Or she can go with him and be basically guaranteed. Every time somebody's had to pair themselves off and Scott's not the person doing the pairing, the person picks Scott to work with them. So I think obviously you want the person that's going to guarantee you the spot in the finals, but then you have to go up against him. So I thought it was a really interesting conundrum that she faced. And I think she made the right choice ultimately, because I think Scott was the person that was most likely to get them to the end. Although this editing, man, it sure made it look like the editing. I don't even think I could tell you one thing that Swifty and Zeus did in that whole challenge, because the whole thing was, oh my God, Scott and Sarah did something wrong. Oh, how are they going to make up the time? How do we know how much time they have to make up? Cause we don't know what the other team is doing. We're just watching. Like, it was like, we're watching the whole thing on that GoPro that was in the top of Scott's helmet.
Swifty had trouble undoing the bolts.
Yeah, when the thread is red, you're good, right? Is that what Phil said?
Yes. I really think that was very interesting twist, this Final Four challenge, because that I wonder, could we see like the emergent gameplay start to come through maybe in season 3 or 4? Mike, if Sarah realizes Scott is her biggest competition, the only way to ensure that your biggest competition doesn't get to the end might be to tank the last challenge and basically take the competitor you're worried about to overtime.
Listen, I would love that. That is not Tough as Nails, unfortunately. I think that there is some really fun strategic stuff, but we even saw that earlier on. Remember when Scott paired people up in that sheep challenge and he's like, Freight Train and an Angel, I want to see you in the bottom. And everyone kind of went after him for it. And he himself felt bad about doing it. I think at this point, it has still become clear that that's not what the show is about. Mm-hmm. It would certainly be fun to see, because I think it would be a cool idea of, well, Scott's our biggest threat. Like, either I put him on another team and take someone like Zeus, who probably is one of the most expert people with these hand signals, or to your point, Rob, I'll work with him, but I'll throw the challenge. It would have not worked out for Sarah here, because I will flat out say that I think if Sarah went into that overtime challenge against any of those guys, she's losing.
Yeah.
Including Scott, who basically like is the height that they had to climb there.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Scott, he has a fear of heights, potentially that might have slowed him down a little bit. But yeah, I actually thought that the overtime challenge was I would have liked to have seen more people do that. But that just seemed like that was just like a super physical thing of like climb up a beam.
It's the Aussie Memorial Challenge, right? Like climb a beam and kids will be inspired by you. Yeah, I really don't know how to feel about this. I was surprised that there was an overtime challenge, because as we remember in the Final Four last time, the forklift challenge, it was just the person that finished in last was eliminated. I mean, I'll love to talk to Phil about this. I'll be completely candid. This sort of reeked to me of like, we need somewhere to go. Let's go around the corner and climb these beams. Mm-hmm. The challenge, I mean, Phil would said this could take seconds. I would be surprised if this took less than 2 minutes. Total. And I feel for the editors who had to try to make that mountain out of a molehill for a 2 minute challenge. But it really did seem like, okay, we have to throw one last overtime in there. Let's just sort of have them do this quick little 2 minute thing and then retire for the day.
Yeah, just because it was such a story for Swifty all season long about like the injuries that he had, especially to his feet. Like, this must have been, and kudos to Swifty for, you know, the valiant effort. But that could not have been easy for him.
No, it looked like he was really suffering, like even in that short amount of time. But honestly, was this really a story that was this really a recurring thread throughout the season? Because I feel like Swifty is maybe the person on the show that I know the least well. I remember hearing about his foot when he went into overtime at the very beginning. And then like we get maybe 30 seconds of Swifty every other episode. But I knew he was probably not going to the finals and he certainly wasn't going to win just because I would go in my head. I would try to think of like name all the tough as nails contestants this season. He was always the very last one. I'm like, who am I forgetting?
Ooh,
who am I
forgetting? He's the golden boy of tough as nails season two.
Yeah, he totally is. It's really, I think I don't know. I had some kind of Swifty related mental block. Mm-hmm. I could not remember that he was even on the show. I was like, oh wow, he's still here and he's in the final four. He had a great run. I think as a competitor, he just didn't have any kind of story.
I'd agree with that. I mean, I think compared to the other three, I spoke last week about how I didn't think narratively speaking, Zeus really had that edit to win. So when I saw him in the final three, especially when it was him versus Scott in the final challenge, I'm like, well, I think it's abundantly clear that Scott's winning at this point. But I think Swifty doesn't necessarily not have that narrative content. We talked last week, right, about like the really tragic story about his town. It's just we get it in spots as opposed to Scott and Sarah, which Rob, you made some very good points about how like we've got a lot of consistent Scott content throughout. We've got some building Sarah stuff near the end. Like those felt more consistent. The Swifty stuff, we found out a lot about him at the beginning and a lot about him at the end. And in between was just sort of like, well, Swifty's there and he's making comments.
Yeah.
I want the record to show I pegged Scott as the winner from like episode two.
Your edit reading of Tough as Nails is unparalleled.
Yeah, I was reading the Tejic.
Is it Tejic? Would it be Tangic?
I don't know.
Yeah,
Tangic. Tangic sounds good. I don't know. We have a running Brant Steele game that our friend Grace Leader runs, and we call it Gregic. So
yeah. Should it be Fejic then, like Phil Edgic?
Phedgic. Okay.
I feel like that in terms of Swifty, that I think that Swifty did have like a story, but I just feel like that he was like, I think he's more of like the strong silent type. Like, I feel like that Swifty does not talk a lot. So like, I feel like where there are other people who are sort of like more just like verbose with what they have to say. Like, I think that Swifty is like more like speak softly, but then like, you know, occasionally like has like really poignant things to say.
Yeah. But I do think that maybe if we're talking about Swifty's story, it does come to a conclusion here in that, what do we know about Swifty? He's going to get off to a running start and then kind of gas out a bit. And we even saw it in this very short form
challenge. Appropriately named Swifty.
Yeah, where he gets off to an early lead, makes it halfway up, and then he is able to like sort of slow down, or maybe Zeus gets a better grip. Did it come down to the gloves? Because it is noticeable that Zeus takes off the gloves and Swifty doesn't. Do you think he was starting to slip because of the gloves that allowed Zeus to get ahead there?
It's a good question. I that almost seems counterintuitive, though, because I would think that the gloves were helping your grip.
I guess it depends on what types of gloves were they. You know, like, were they the sort of, what was the name? I call them Wu shoes because Wu wore them on Survivor Cagayan.
Like those Vibram five-finger things?
Yeah, exactly. Like, was that type of consistency on the gloves, or were there something that was a little more slippery to them? Because in that case, I would rather just do, you know, go with my hands and just, you know, make my way up there. Even if my hands get sweaty, I still probably have more traction there than if I just, like, you know, try to go with these gardening gloves and slip down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Mike. Maybe you and Puya could be round number two.
Oh yeah, there we go. We're gonna climb the beam. Like, oh, we tested the lower body. Now it's time to test the upper body.
I mean, honestly, of all of the toughest nails challenges, this one seems like it would be one of the easier ones to replicate at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably the most simplistic one that we have had all season. But I really did the partner idea. Initially, I agree. Going back to that element, I was a little like, this is odd. I don't know how I feel about this, because then there's still a teamwork idea involved. But like, there was some interesting ideas to, okay, Sarah had to make her choice. And it was close. You know, you'd think that Scott and Sarah, just due to track record, would completely dominate. But I guess it was pretty neck and neck.
Yeah.
mainly due to their beam just careening out of control.
Well, I was wondering that if it was going to be a close call, like I was wondering like how like Phil was going to be able to like make that like, okay, sure. If you should see red, then you know that the bolt is through, but from like down on the ground, like, I don't know if it was like a photo finish. Like I was worried about like, how are they going to call this one?
I'm sure they have producers and cameras set up. Same way with like, how did they find that little tiny speck of gray for the very particular man with the parking garage? You know, he had his people, you know, the very particular man had his people on it.
Yeah.
Jess, did you like the Amazing Race shout out during the individual challenge?
I mean, I'm always here for a good Amazing Race shout out.
The crane operators were named Joe and Bill.
Oh, right. Oh. Yeah, I did note that. But that's classic Amazing Race.
Yes.
Yeah, Team Guido represented in the crane operators.
Should they have actually gotten Team Guido to be the crane operators?
I really wanted it to be actual Joe and Bill.
I do believe that they live in you know, Cyril's home state of Hawaii, so they could have just flown in with him.
Yeah.
Like, say hello to Joe and Bill, our special guests.
Yeah, we have exacting COVID quarantines, but somehow we were able to bring a team from another show that was on 20 years ago.
Well, I mean, they were in the cranes. Like, nobody was like within 6 feet of them.
Yeah. I mean, they could have just implied that they were in there in post. Who's going to know?
Yeah. They gave all of the teams the opportunity to get a video from a loved one, but there was no more emotional moment for me than the return of Freight Train this week. He made it back, and I think that Freight Train got the treatment of
he got it like 10 times in a row, which I'm gonna say was specifically added in for the three of us. Nobody loves that stinger more than we do. It was just like, I feel like Phil was like, no, 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 play it like 12 more times.
We love it. We love it.
We know some people that are going to love it.
So, yeah, Freight Train made it back. And they asked Freight Train, like, Freight Train, look at these are the final competitors. Well, what'd you think? And Freight Train said, I had a pretty good idea. Pretty good idea that was going to be the crew. Everybody else were like, hey, screw you, Freight Train.
Yeah. Hey, wait, F you, dude. I'm playing. I gave you money after we won that gardening challenge. I'm taking that back now.
Yes.
I mean, in fairness, I was saying the same thing, but I guess it's coming from a different place if it's somebody from your team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although, and Phil told us that Freight Train is best friends with Zeus. So maybe like that he was especially saying that I had a pretty good idea Zeus was going to be there.
You know what? Actually, maybe he was able to benefit from that. Like, if there were multiple Dirty Hands people in the final challenge, right? Would he be like, I don't know who to pick? Because that's always the interesting part as well, is when it's a final three and it's two people from one team and one person from the other team. If you're from the team that has two people in it, like, who do you root for?
You have to show your loyalty. Yeah. Did you feel like more of Savage Crew was rooting for Scott than Sarah?
That's how it seemed.
You know, I think they lucked out in that, like, Scott and Sarah, especially, like, Scott got out pretty far ahead of Sarah after that jackhammer stuff. So I think they could very easily be like, well, sorry, Sarah, like, Scott, you know, was so far out there that you see Sally and Meryl yelling encouragement to Scott. And then you sort of hear Meryl be like, yes, yeah, Sarah, come on.
Yeah.
Sarah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sarah. So I think, unfortunately, due to the position that Sarah found herself in, it became pretty clear cut for Savage Crew to be like, all right, I think we can sort of like throw our cheers and adorations behind Scott at this moment, because he's the one that's really in it to win it right now.
Yeah, I mean, we could always go back and cheer for Sarah after Scott finishes the course.
Yeah,
that's true. If Scott finishes first, he's going to be like, where the hell were you guys? Then, you know, better to do the former than the latter.
I did really like when Scott said to Meryl, thank you for never stop yelling at me.
I love that dynamic so much. And again, it sort of comes out here where you have Meryl being the one to really be like the main motivator for Scott in that moment. It's just really speaking about what is probably the most fun two-person dynamic of this season, that even though Meryl was out of the individual competition by this final challenge, she was still like there on Scott's shoulder, essentially telling him, keep on moving. I'm not going to let you hear the end of it if you don't make it here.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on. It is our time. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Not only did Freight Train return, but we got my favorite part of every Tough as Nails season. We got the ending catch up with the crew of Tough as Nails season two. Jess, I love this so much. I wish every show should have this.
Yeah, well, you know, this really does sort of play into everything that we know about what Phil wants this show to be.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just laid bare right in that moment. It's like, we want to make sure everybody who works hard is acknowledged for the role that they played.
Yeah.
Who here has gone into roofing from this season after participating in Tough as Nails? Well,
could we go through the updates one by one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And we got to make sure that we call out Judge Reinhold for getting made manager of the Mighty Mart.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and also Warren for not graduating with honors, no girlfriend, and no job prospects either.
All right. So let's go through the updates. Mike, do you have them?
Yeah. So first off, Irida worked on her fitness, and we see some like fantastic footage of her getting her gains on, and then she went to Panama with her son to visit her mom.
Okay. Good for Irida.
Yeah. I can tell I'm too close to this show because I watched all these updates and I'm like, oh, I knew this already because I follow them all on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Don't spoil yourself by, you should follow these contestants on social media and you know, support them in any way. But yeah, you sort of already got the where are they now months ahead of time.
Yeah. Okay. So do we know what Irida was doing in the gym, Jess? Could you make out what she was, what her fitness regimen was?
I mean, she does a lot of weight training.
Yeah.
And she posts a lot of gym selfies. So I knew that she was definitely making great gains.
It makes sense, Mike, because training is her specialty.
No, that's Patrick. Free training specifically. Yeah.
Well, she works on the rail lines.
That's true. Yeah. So she has her own way around the trains, as it were. Two words I never thought we'd hear again in Tough as Nails season two: Mikey eyebrows.
I was surprised we got the Mikey eyebrows update.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, I know that we don't exactly know the full details of the thing. It does not appear that he left specifically of his own volition. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little surprised we got the update, but he's moving out west with his family.
Yeah, is that? It just
no more two-bedroom apartment.
Mikey eyebrows go Hollywood?
Yeah, apparently. You do 1.5 episodes of a TV show, and all of a sudden, you're going to try to make a career out of it.
These eyebrows are ready for L.A.
Ready for prime time.
Mikey primetime eyebrows.
We've seen the eyebrows. Now we get to know the rest of him.
Mm-hmm.
That almost sounds like, Rob, you spoke about this on Spinoffs Are Trash on Renap a couple of weeks ago. That sounds like a spinoff on its own of like Mikey Eyebrows goes west from New York to L.A.
Yep. He's making the leap from Staten Island to I'm trying to think of what the West Coast version of Catalina Island. I don't know.
The only island, Alcatraz.
Yeah. I don't know where exactly he would go. But all right. I mean, be interesting to find out what's going on there with Mikey Eyebrows and the family.
So Sally is working on, I guess, building out her own family. She is not only working at a vaccine clinic, but she's engaged. And there was a really cute footage of like her and her fiance with like rose petals falling down on them. I hope for both of their sakes that he drives the car from the wedding with the cans clanking behind it, or they might be in trouble.
Yeah, look, if I'm just spitballing here, but if you're looking for ways to get people like who might be a little on the fence about the vaccine, like get Sally out there promoting people go get the vaccine. Here's this nice lady, Sally, who's here to help you. Like, hi, I'm Sally. And I just wanted to recommend that all American adults get the coronavirus vaccine.
Yeah, or she could do something, right, where maybe she can bring a little bit of personality as well. Like, she was also one of the ones that was yelling encouragement at Scott. Like, I feel like she could really bring that energy, too, if she was really dealing with some ordinary people there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that we should be, really promoting Sally.
All right, well, let's move on here, because it seems like now it's requisite in every Tough as Nails season that when the season's done, at least one person's going to go into roofing. It happened with Tara last year. No, Linda, right? Linda went from the corrections facility to becoming a roofer. And Zeus has not, quit his day job, but apparently on the weekends, he's roofing now.
Yeah.
He's roofing.
It's the most fun way to spend your weekend is roofing. And let me just say that I no roofer Lee in sight, but so I'm on the second floor here where I record the podcast. And so the next house next to me is right there. And there is like a crew of like, 8 or 9 guys just roofing away right outside my window. I have not spot. If you hear any like nail guns going off during this podcast, saying hello to all these nice gentlemen who are out here, and they are doing. I'm getting to see up close like the whole job. I wish Phil was here to be able to say like, look at these guys working.
Can you, Rob, you can really get in with them since you know the lingo. Can you open your window and be like, oh, it's a wang dang doodle today, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a, hey guys, this job's a real wang dang doodle. Do you need that? And I'll tell you, Mike, they have not brought all of the shingles up there. They're waiting. They're going to wait.
They're professionals. But in addition to that, Zeus is still a lineman. In fact, he is training other linemen as well. So it's very clear he sort of like has his hands in a lot of jars at this point with all the different trades he's working in.
Good for Zeus.
Yeah, absolutely. He came in second place, but he basically like won a new career path as well.
I really liked Zeus throughout the season. I feel like that Zeus was sort of like underutilized, if anything, on the season.
Yeah, he's very funny. He's very personable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very charismatic, Zeus.
Yeah, I wanted more from him. I felt like maybe we could have played it up as like a rivalry even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that like Swifty, Zeus was maybe not like one of the people to go to for especially like pump up dramatic confessionals like you might get from others. But what I really like about Zeus is I feel like Zeus is not the type of person you usually cast for a reality show, and that like he's a little more soft-spoken. We talked about this with Murph, right? It seems like he's a little bit more of an introvert. But I really enjoyed his presence overall, and it does seem like he almost had an arc as well. He talked about this at the end, right, where he learned like it's possible to be too overconfident, that he is used to sort of working his way or the highway, and now he's used to like now he's learned to take other people's opinions into account. So even though I think it was on a smaller scale than a Scott or Sarah, I think that Zeus still had his own little journey, the journeyman of Zeus as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Phil, are you there?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I am.
Good morning, Phil. And welcome in the host and creator of Tough as Nails. Now, congratulations, Phil. Get back to work on season 3 and 4 of Tough as Nails.
Yes. Well, listen, I'm just setting up my light here, but thank you for thanks for all your support, you guys. And yeah, it was a big day yesterday.
Yeah.
So that being said, I mean, how much information do you know? I know you're still auditioning for season 3, but what do you know if the intention would be, because it has been renewed for 2 seasons, to do like a season in the fall and a season in the spring, if the schedule allows it?
I really don't know. I don't know. It just was doing 3 and 4 together makes a lot of sense financially.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, we were able to then also get some consistency with the people that we want to have on. And it's something that you always want to have, because starting up a new season every single time takes a lot.
Yeah.
As you know, so we feel really lucky.
So, I hadn't even been thinking of it that way. So, in the same way, like Survivor will like shoot 2 seasons, basically like back to back. That's going to be the plan for Tough as Nails.
Well, we won't shoot back to back, but we'll be able to roll key people over from one season onto another season. Mm. Our key editors and producers, and also just because everybody on the production is working freelance, it's hard to know what people are doing. They obviously want to work on, hopefully they want to work on your show, but they also got to go make a living too. Mm-hmm. So the more you can project and give them a schedule ahead, the better, more likely you are to get the people that you really would like. How Jess, it's so nice to see you. I'm sorry you had to run out. I felt terrible. I like you were gone and I didn't even get to say
hi. I'm sorry,
or anything. You just like, you were like one of those old movies where the person just disappears.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, Phil. I have a hard out every day at a particular time, or,
got to clock out.
Yeah. My son's preschool teacher comes after me.
It was very Star Trek-esque. It was like you zapped a button and just disappeared and mm-hmm. ended up in another world.
It was like Thanos came down and just erased me.
And just took you out. I was like,
oh. Do you think Thanos wears the gloves when he climbs the beams, or do you think he goes without gloves? Phil, can I talk to you about that for a second? Because I would love to hear your thoughts about that final overtime challenge. We talked about this earlier on the podcast. I was a bit surprised that you did a final overtime challenge, because last time it was just whoever finished at the bottom of the forklift challenge. At what point in the process did you decide we want to do one final overtime challenge and we'll have it be this sort of beam climbing done in a second type of challenge?
Well, we actually had a overtime challenge in season one, and there was a change in creative change in a choice not to put it in, not to have it.
Oh,
and I always liked the idea of it because I felt there was a good opportunity for some extra drama in the show. So we managed to convince the network to let us do it. And it was like an all or nothing, very different from any of the overtimes. Just again, because we're just such a young show, we're still trying things, And I told the editor that I wanted them to think of a stare down on a dusty street in a cowboy town where the two cowboys are eyeing each other up and they got their hands at the ready and they're waiting for that quick draw. And to just slow down time and just live in that moment and the intensity of it all. And I think our editor Sue did an amazing job with that whole scene. And did you pick up at all what was going on with the beam and the way they were sitting? Any of you pick up the
that famous painting of all the people on the beam high up in the high rise? Mm-hmm.
Rob, Bill, thank you. Yes, that's correct. I'm glad you picked up on that. Yeah, I've always loved that photograph. And when I was doing sort of a style sheet for Tough as Nails early on, it was one that I had pulled out, and as well as old photographs of workers in the 30s and so on. And so, yeah, that was kind of what we were alluding to there, just them all sitting on the beam watching the showdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Phil, congratulations to Scott on being the Tough as Nails season 2 champion. Do you have any thoughts on Scott's win?
In what way? Sorry.
Just in terms of like, how do you see Scott as a winner of the show?
Yeah, especially compared to Murph, who I think had a very different type of journey than Scott did. Two very different players in Tough as Nails.
Yes, very different. I think what Scott proved is the strength of life skills, because Scott was not necessarily the fittest on the cast. Murph was definitely, his fitness level was extreme. Scott had a good base of fitness, but he wasn't, say, as aerobically fit as Knuckles or Raida. Again, I'm surmising here, but I think if you just look at aerobic fitness, I don't think he was as he was in the top group of our contestants in terms of fitness. But what I think he had in spades, so to speak, was he had incredible life skills. He really could turn his hand at anything. And I think that's ultimately what got him to the top of the pile and got him the win.
Yeah. I mean, that's what that final challenge was, right? It's just an accumulation of a lot of different skills.
Well, absolutely. I have a question about that then. So you say that you can kind of rank the aerobic fitness of the different contestants. How much evaluating? What is the evaluation process like for that? Do you test them before they compete?
Yeah. So I think I've spoken before about the brutal truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the brutal truth is as many burpee push-ups as a person can do in an 8-minute period. You try to do 10 in the first 30 seconds. And if you don't make it, you have to take a 30-second penalty. And then the next time you do it, you do 9. And if you don't make 9, you take a 30-second penalty and you try to do 8 and so on. And Scott's score was good, but not anywhere near as high as Angel, who had the highest, or
that makes sense,
or Knuckles, who was the fittest of all of the women. If you remember last season, Linda and Melissa had higher. I think it was the order of fitness was for the burpee pushups was Danny, Linda, Melissa. Murph was actually further down, but again, because it's not just aerobic fitness, it's strength and it's also mental toughness and it's and life skills. I think it just goes to prove that you can't just win on your fitness or your strength. Angel couldn't just win based on that those attributes. You had to have the combination. And that's why when you look at Michelle's brutal truth score, she was right up there. I mean, she was over 100 burpee pushups in 8 minutes, which for anybody is high. But for a 62-year-old woman, it just goes to show you just how fit she was. Mm-hmm. And then you bring all of the life skills you have. That's why she did so well. That's why she went so deep into the competition. So aerobically, Knuckles was, you know, and right out of the gate, we saw that. She was a hot contender. I think where she struggled at times was just when things got complicated, and she spoke about that openly. But when she was in her comfort zone, like she was in the landscaping, she was pretty much unbeatable. She really was a force. So at the end of the day, by the time you've gone through all these different challenges, any weaknesses are going to start to show up. So I think Scott's win was about consistency and strength, endurance, agility, mental toughness. And I think what really got him the win in the end was his life skills. I think that was what separated him from everybody else. A lot of people with a lot of life skill, tough as nails. But I think Scott had the most.
Phil, we saw that Sarah had to make a big decision to start off the episode. And I think we all really liked the idea of like, okay, do you pick the person that's going to help you win? Or do you send your biggest competition to the other team where maybe they'll potentially lose? Did you feel like that was the right decision for Sarah to take Scott?
No, I don't. I don't. I think her pick really was Zeus. And I was really trying to get her to think deeply about what she was about to do, because she was pulling the person who on paper had the biggest chance of winning tough as nails. Zeus knew how to use a crane. Zeus was good with heights. Zeus had proven himself to be a hot contender. I think that Sarah and Zeus could have won that challenge and would have forced Scott and Swifty into overtime. I think that had Scott had to do that climb against Swifty, Swifty would have beaten him. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been a weakness for Scott with power to weight ratio, trying to climb up a vertical column. So I really do believe, and look, hindsight,
again, we don't know, but if it was me, and even though he was on another team, I would have picked Zeus. I think Zeus was starting to really shine, and I think at that point, and he had all the skills and attributes. I would have been a little worried about taking Scott up on top of that structure, knowing that he was scared of heights. I mean, he dealt with it with no issue at all, by the way. But I really do believe Sarah and Zeus could have teamed up and won that without Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just my opinion.
No, I mean, I think the one thing I would push against was, like you said, I think maybe Sarah picking Zeus was the big X factor because they had never worked together. I would imagine that one reason why she picks Scott, she's like, look, I just want to make sure that I get through. So if I do, let me pick someone that I know I can work with really well, even if he's a threat, as opposed to like, I might make this move, but then I end up in overtime against someone like Zeus who...
Yeah,
basically made turn that beam into a ladder in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, no, I understand there's arguments on both sides, and again, we are talking about hindsight here, so it's easy now, and so I get what you're saying. It was for her a little bit of insurance. She knows Scott more, and I felt that she was just really trying to just she wasn't necessarily thinking about the final steps as much as the next step, and the next step was how do I try to, what's the best way for me to get into the final three? And I think she looked at Scott and went, that is my best chance of getting into the final three.
Well, it's tricky because this show is so much about like the camaraderie about the teams. And I do wonder, it's like, okay, well, if I can't win, then I'll be happy if like my teammate wins. Whereas like taking Zeus would be like a little bit more of like the cutthroat move of sending the other two like Savage Crew people. Like you're sort of like guaranteeing that one of them is going to be eliminated and, you know, out of the consideration. So it's like a weird pivot for the people that have like been so much about the team to then be thinking like individual first.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it gets in the way of making sometimes maybe making the best decisions for the individual because there is that loyalty. And you know, even when they won and then they signed the beam, they signed Savage Crew on there, right? They were still thinking team. So it does definitely get in the way of. It definitely gets in the way. I think Zeus made it very clear that he could switch gears and that he was about winning for his family. And I think he didn't have any trouble switching gears. But I think some of the others, absolutely, they were very much about teams. I mean, Knuckles was constantly talking about that. I think Knuckles, if Knuckles had to choose between being the overall winner and winning the team competition, I wouldn't be surprised if she said, I'd rather win with my team. I'd get more satisfaction out of that. I think it's just the way Knuckles is.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
And
but
for Zeus, like, it was probably easier for him because the rest of his team was all eliminated. You know, he was the only, like, representative for Dirty Hands, where the Savage Crew had three people in the finals. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. He didn't have the same moral issues or you know, connections. And but, yeah, I thought... we've been wanting to do that that iron working challenge for quite a while. When I did the first write-up for it before, it was actually way early, like a few years ago, I worked with a challenge producer, and we described it as a giant game of operation where you had to get the beams inside the structure without touching the sides. And at one point, we were thinking, you know, that we would penalize people for touching the structure, like you had to get it in without, you know, being
exactly. It was light up red if that was the case, so they knew that they got it wrong.
Exactly. It'd be like a big red light that goes on or something. But whew, I'm glad we didn't go down that road because Scott really made it difficult for himself to get that beam in there that was like flying all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the final challenge, so with the family videos, was that something like, did everyone's family get asked to make a video? Did you reach out to those three's family like right beforehand to make a video? What was the process behind getting all that?
Yeah, I mean, we did last time with flying the families for the final three out, we just sort of said, look, you're husband or your girlfriend or your wife is doing really well. There's a chance that they may make it into the final three. If they do, would you be available to fly? So it's the same thing with the videos. If they do, would you be available to make a video? We'll need it by this day and so on. So it was the same process of letting them know that and having them on standby because we didn't know whether we were going to have one for Swifty if he was going to make it through. You know, it's interesting. Yesterday, we had a lot of good chatter on about the show, which was nice, you know, because it's hard with a brand new show to like generate that online chatter. There's mm-hmm. so much stuff out there. And it's good that there's more dialogue going on about the show, which is great. You know, I think word of mouth about the show, people are starting to talk about the show and what it means. And I got this great video from a guy who saw our cameraman at a recycling plant and he had his Tough as Nails hat on. And the guy, Jose, at this recycling plant said, "Oh, Tough as Nails, I love that show." And Scott said, "Oh, well, I work on that show. I'm the lead DP." And he goes, "Really?" He goes, "Would you mind sending a message to Phil?" And Scott said, "Yeah, hold on a second." So he shot it and he put it up. And it was basically that he loves Tough as Nails because the show makes working class people feel important, you know, like acknowledges working class people. And when you see stuff like that, you realize just that guy working in that recycling plant, those people who are out there making the deliveries, climbing up poles, doing the hard yards across the country, that this show is really about them. It's not about the aspiring singer or the dancer or that. And by the way, all great shows and we need those shows too, but they see that this is their show. This is about their people. This is about so many of the masses of people in America who keep the country running. So it's just a good feeling. Anyway, there was one guy, he said, "How do I convince my mother that this show is not scripted and that you didn't script it out?" And I don't know how to answer that question. Like, you know, how do they, I don't comprehend sometimes how people think, like, really, like, "Hey, listen, Sarah, I've got a really good idea. Would you mind if Scott just won this one, you know, just for the hell of it? Or, you know, Dirty Hands, you've had a good run, but if it's all right with you, we'd really love to script it, that this is a complete annihilation and you guys get crushed in the final team challenge. You're good with that, right?" I mean, we are going to give them money, but I just don't get it. Like, what is it? Have we become so, really? Oh, man. And then it speaks to the integrity of the people we have on the show. You really think Zeus and or Knuckles would be convinced of just throwing something? Mm. Not in your life would they ever do that. Not in your life.
What, this is not the thing to do, but what I would do is I would be like, "No, actually, so you see the script that I had for this season, they actually would off book a significant portion of time." Mm-hmm. "Then you thumb through this like fake script of, well, no, Dirty Hands was supposed to win at the end. And then there was this moment where Zeus is climbing up the ladder, but then the ladder falls apart. But then Terra comes in on a boat to save him at the end of the day from falling into the river. But they just went off the script." So no, I tried to make it scripted, but it's not. It's all real.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I highly recommend you got to carry around a blank notebook all the time, just in case somebody asks you this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, you're so right. I've got to. Yeah. Wow.
And write down all those suggestions you get.
It's amazing to me, but, yeah, just, I think what I'm hearing consistently is just an appreciation for our cats and integrity and work ethic. And I think it's just it's come at the right time to have some of these messages out there in the world at a time where there is a lot of division. And I think, I feel good that we're able to make something that I think leaves people feeling positive. Definitely is a show that makes people cry as well as laugh, hopefully. But it's nice to make something.
Yeah, it's nice to make that kind of impact. So here's kind of a cynical question, Phil. Uh-oh. We're going to go from this to cynical.
Okay.
Because the show is actually kind of gaining in popularity. And, you know, you just got renewed for a couple more seasons. It's more people are taking interest in it. It's kind of getting a little bit of social buzz. At one point, are you going to start to have trouble maintaining that integrity? Like, are there going to be people coming in for the wrong reasons?
Could be. I think it's impossible to know what waters we're going to have to navigate down the line. I certainly wouldn't want to jump the shark with things and try to, you know, like, I think we just need to stay strong to what we set out to do in the beginning and try to hold to that. I do see a time where we would have an All-Stars. I could see that happening where we would bring the very best of Savage Crew and the very best of Dirty Hands in for an All-Star team competition, including some winners who then go head-to-head for a kind of like an All-Star winner. You know, like maybe if we were lucky enough to be down the road at season 10 or something and let the fans vote for who they want to come back on, you know, their favorites from both Savage Crew and Dirty Hands. But, you know, look, you're speaking to something that there are lots of temptations when you're making a show to go for those things that sometimes take away from the original intent. And I remember on Amazing Race, when we first did the show, the idea of being on a television show, on a reality show, was such a foreign thing for so many people. They didn't sort of understand how something, an opportunity like that could be leveraged to go do something else, to become famous, to start their own show, to be an influencer or whatever. And now people are so savvy. Like, you'll have people on the show and they'll go, would you like me to do that sound bite again? Or a plane will fly over and they'll literally, you know, they've never done television before and they'll go, you want me to do that again because of the plane?
Mm-hmm.
Did that mess up the sound?
Just Meryl, or was that other people too? Because Meryl knows her way around what planes sound like.
Yeah, exactly. She's the one that picks up on the plane noise. But people are so savvy. They know what green screens are. They know what they know what a waveform is. They know how to do editing. And there's a vernacular that used to be this hidden away in this secret world of what we did in television. And I go back, by the way, you know, like to the 80s. So I go back a long, long way with film. But it was like almost like a magic trick that we did, you know, where nobody had access to these broadcasting capabilities that we had. You had to have this very expensive television studio. And to get out there into the world, you had to go, you had to be on a TV show. You don't need that anymore. Like, I could go live around the world on my phone right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people are just, yeah, I think there's always a risk of that, Jess, but as long as we, I think in our casting, continue to look for the authenticity in our casting, drywall Danny, third generation drywaller, that's what he loves. That's what he went back to on Monday. Is Danny going to quit being a drywaller and become, you know, an actor or some influence or whatever? But I don't think so. I think he's sort of so entrenched in that world with his family that I can't see him doing that. Or is Melissa going to leave the farm? I don't think so. So I think we have to just continue to make sure that we have authenticity in our casting so that there isn't people who are like, oh, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to become a, you know, the next Masked Singer or something.
They have to wear like a welding
mask. It's Rufus Lee. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I want to go on record as saying I would be here for it if we put Rufus Lee on other shows, but I just don't want that to become the focus of Tough as Nails as like a springboard to other media opportunities. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I know for a fact that, you know, there's something that Carhartt did where they reached out to one of our contestants, which you'll find out about next week. And Carhartt wanted to, because of authenticity, they wanted to do something about a working mums. And so they reached out to one of our contestants, and asked her to be part of this campaign. And I personally am excited for them and happy for them. And Carhartt looked after this person and their family, brought their whole family out. So I can't be in control of what people might do or what people might go on to do after the show. But I think to your point, the idea is that we just continue to stick to the authentic mm-hmm. aspect of what the show is. And but you can never stop people from leveraging it to go do something else. Mm-hmm. That's impossible.
Mm-hmm. It's just like which doors are opening and right. which doors are they mm-hmm. going to go through?
Yeah. And look, if Murph ends up... if Murph ends up acting in an episode of SEAL Team or,
wow,
you know, I'd be fine with that. It's like, you know, that's what he is. He's authentic. And look, they did that with Tyler Gray. Tyler Gray was real deal military who went in to become an actor, and he adds an authenticity to that show as the result. So I'm never going to begrudge anybody from jumping from being on Tough as Nails to going to do something else. I just don't know if it's necessarily in the nature of the type of people that we have on our show. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like people who walk in the audition room sometimes on other shows I've worked on where they literally will say, you know, I want to be famous and I want people to know my name and I want to, you know, like they're just completely candid about it.
Yeah.
We've never heard that from anybody on our show.
Phil, my favorite part of the finale of Tough as Nails is the update that we get about all of the different players and what they're doing after the show. How hard is that to like narrow it down to like their update into like a sentence or two?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard, but it's I've always been frustrated when I've watched the documentary and I know that or watched a series or something and I know that so much has happened since the end of filming and I'm kind of itching to want to know. And was one of our young producers who had suggested it. And we were like, you know, that's an interesting idea because there's always those questions like, well, what are they doing now? You know, what are they? And so I think to your point, I think it illustrated that everybody went back to work, right? Like Freight Train's still out there in the winter, still wearing shorts, still making his deliveries. And that was, I thought that was a nice little, and a nice little punctuation at the end. So, yeah, back to work.
Do you ask the players to submit like their updates, or are you more so like scrolling through their social media?
Oh no, we ask them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we have a producer get on the phone and sort of tell us what you've been up to. Oh, really? You went to see him? Okay, great. Okay, and how are you coping and what's going on at work? And, oh, I just got a promotion and okay, that's great. Great. Do you have any photos of that? Yeah. Well, okay. Good. Videos. You got any videos of, yeah. Okay. Congratulations. That's wonderful. You're pregnant. Oh, wonderful. Okay. And so, yeah, no, it's digging into there. Absolutely. No, we don't want to miss anything, right? Like anything really important. But I think to see Knuckles and to see that she's pregnant and know that she's going to have a baby, you leave that with in people's minds. They're thinking, wow, this woman is so tough and she's got one kid already and she's managing to be a working mom. And now she's got another baby on the way. And I think people love that thought. And then, you know, if she ever came back for All-Stars, they'd remember that. You know, when she left last time, now she has three children and she's, you know, by the way, look what I got on.
Yes. What is that? Team?
Oh, Rida.
Team Rida. Yes.
Rida. Look at that.
It. Yeah. So I've got, I have my Merrill shirt, Freight Train. I didn't get a Drywall Danny, but I've got Tough as Rida.
What does the Freight Train shirt say?
It's got a picture of a freight train on it.
It literally just says freight train, and it's got a big freight train on the front. Okay.
I thought it would be like the generic brown polo with
he
like
needs
freight train written on the
freight train shorts, Phil. That's the branding for freight train. Wear all year long shorts.
Yep, you wear them all year long.
I like that. Insulated shorts where you can wear them in the winter and
fleece lined shorts. I love it.
Yeah, like those hockey ones. You know how they have those hockey shorts that are kind of like you don't have the socks. Mm-hmm. So I got my Rida shirt on and, I love the postscript and, I can't believe it's over. I can't believe season two is over. I mean,
Is there anything from season two that you feel like, oh, that is something that I really would like to explore more in season three? Was there anything that you felt like went so well from this season that you wanted to try to expand into the future seasons?
There's a lot. I mean, I've got a document about 30 pages long with things I don't want to do and things that I think I can do better and suggestions that I have for how collectively we can all be better. I think it's very important to look at feedback and then try to take a bit of distance and then sit back and then watch and go, ooh, that doesn't really work, but that really works. That's kind of fun. And I think the thing we really struggled with shooting was shooting at a time when there was a very big black cloud over the country and there was the country was kind of depressed. And so that can't help but filter through the production because people are going home to problems and worrying about COVID and kids that can't go to school and homeschooling and the pressures of what we were all going through. And so there's a couple times where I, you know, my job is I walk in and I try to pump everybody up, get them all going. And there's a couple times where I can see that even my energy is not, I have to, it's my responsibility to get everybody to that place, right? To that TV mindset where you're making an entertainment show. It's not always easy. You know, it's early in the morning and people, you've got to get them out of a funk. And so I feel like, you know, I've got to be more aware of that. I don't think it's going to be as hard this time because I think that the mood is shifting. Mm-hmm. There's more positivity, but I think I want to bring some more levity and people like to laugh. You know, I think that some of the best moments on the season were some of the more fun moments. We put out a thing there, like what was the favorite moment of the whole season? And it was me talking, saying that Ryder was talking to the engine. It was some silly little dad joke. and it's like people notice those little things. And I just want to say before you vanish in a Star Trek fashion and just suddenly whoosh, like a puff of smoke. It's been wonderful talking with you this season. And thank you for your insight. And I hope we get to do this again.
Yeah, I count on it, Phil. We really appreciate you coming by, and I'm so excited that we have the opportunity to do this every season. So we will see you for season three for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have been hugely supportive, and we appreciate it because it's just about getting the word out there, and hopefully, as more and more people talk about it and hear your podcast and. Just a little bit at a time, just word of, you know, our show is a word of mouth show. It's not a big bang train wreck show with big celebrities. It's a little grassroots show. And so it's going to require word of mouth for it to grow. There's no other way.
Yeah.
So, all right. Okay. Bye, Jess.
Well, thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay. Yeah. Jess is about to beam up just like Zeus did in the overtime.
Well, yeah. So speaking towards that feedback, because Phil, I do want to bring up something you definitely, I think, took into account seemingly from the glancing at the final challenge was I think you did make it less focused on, you know, I think the brute strength specifically that a lot of those tasks weren't necessarily like pick this thing up and put it down over there. But I will admit that I have still seen some people feel like it was still maybe a bit unfairly slighted towards men. Still, is that something you're still going to work on? What was sort of the adjustment for you in between seasons when it came to working on this final challenge?
Well, one thing that people might not know and is something that, you know, you can only get in the weeds so much, but we do use power to weight ratio adjustments on challenges, and that included the finale. So those traps were heavier for Scott than they were for Sarah. They were based on body weight. So I understand that might be the perception. Look, I don't think you can ever, with what we're doing, you can never make something 100% fair. We're constantly pushing ourselves to make something absolutely fair for every single person. But, you know, Scott walking into driving a bulldozer when he's driven those machines all his life, there's no way that we can make that fair. And then someone pointed out, well, you know, I can't believe you didn't teach them how to drive the bulldozer. We did. We just can't get into all of the minutiae. And Scott was the only one that had ever driven a bulldozer before. And even with everybody being equally instructed, the spread was over 12 minutes of time. So even with the same instruction, not everybody is going to arrive at the same place in terms of their ability because of other factors that come into play. Zeus was good at it because he was good at PlayStation, right? Freight Train was good at it because he's driven a lot of things. Swifty was good at it because of his driving experience. Meryl because of her driving experience on a plane. So maybe not something that Sally was necessarily strong at, or Knuckles, or Angel for that matter. So yeah, you're constantly doing that. And let's not forget that we have people who are weighing anywhere from 120 pounds to 250, 260 pounds. They are men and women. They're of different ages. They're of different skills, different backgrounds. Name a competition that has that range of competitor in a physical challenge. I'm trying to think of any that are out there that are like this. It's not easy. Yeah. It's very difficult. How did Sarah beat out, you know, speaking of the male female thing, how did Sarah beat out Swifty? How did Linda in season one out-chop the winner in an axe chopping competition? That's the lightest contestant, a woman, out-chopping Danny, drywall Danny, Murph, and Miles. So there's no adjustment for male, female, no adjustment for weight, no adjustment for anything. An axe and some wood. And the lightest contestant beats the winner of Tough as Nails. So it's impossible to make things absolutely fair for absolutely every single person in every single scenario. But we do our best, and we will continue to try to be better. Oh, look at that.
There you go.
Be better.
Synergy.
Hashtag be better with everything that we do.
Yeah. Phil, we were so excited to see Freight Train return. And did we come full circle where Freight Train got the Spec Mix music? Yes.
Fresh out of quarantine.
Yes. Did it just work out that literally like the day he was able to come back happened to be the
pretty
last?
Much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we wanted to bring him back earlier, but it was just, listen, this COVID thing is I don't know if you've noticed, but it's very disruptive. It's called COVID-19.
I've heard that it's really a big problem. Disruptive. Yeah.
Yeah.
It gets in the way of everything. Hmm. So yeah, look, we wanted to bring him back earlier. It just wasn't viable or safe. And we're just so pleased that we managed to squeeze him in and deliver him for the final episode, because it would have been a shame not to. And I think, you know, the audience really wanted it. And it's a bit unfair on him that COVID stopped him from coming back to compete,
right,
and being part of his team, you know, and who knows what might have happened if he was there for the car challenge and if he'd been there for the drywall challenge. We don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's frustrating, because in another world, could have been a very different result, but
yeah,
it wasn't. We were living in that world. We dealt with it as best we could.
So after you finish shooting, Phil, is it immediate? Because I can imagine that another reason to see Freight Train back was like, oh, he gets to see everybody. Was it like immediately, okay, let's pack up, go home? Is there like a wrap party that you throw when the season finally finishes?
Well, first of all, because of COVID, we can have a wrap party.
That's true.
You know, we've never actually had like a proper celebration for Tough as Nails, because we finished shooting season one. We had a little bit of a gathering after season one, because that was before the whole COVID outbreak. But then once the show went to air, we couldn't have a production gathering to do some kind of celebration. We couldn't do it when we found out about doing season two. We couldn't do it off the back of this one. And so, no, it was literally like, we got to get packed up and send everybody home and get them home safely. Like, our number one focus was we wanted to make sure that we got every single person back home off the clock, COVID free. Mm-hmm. And Terry, who is our EIC, achieved that goal with his team. Extremely proud of them for doing it, because there are a lot of shows that did not get through COVID free.
Yeah.
And with all the hundreds of people that we had working on the show, he did it. And so I'm really proud of that. But no, there was no, couldn't do it. I mean, I'm hoping obviously in the future, that's going to change.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. God willing, when you get to filming three and four, this won't be nearly as big of a concern.
Well, we going into three, which will be in the summer, we're going to definitely have to follow COVID protocols. That's the crazy thing. Most of us will be, I would imagine, will be vaccinated. But even then, there's going to be certain protocols to follow. So, but then who knows if we shoot season four by the end of the year. I don't know. I just saw that whole thing, what's going on in Europe right now. With the third wave, I just can't wait to get this. I mean, this is just a nightmare, what's going on. It's just as you think it's all coming to a head and it's all getting better, then you hear crazy reports about what's going on overseas. I'm like, oh,
well, I guess the good news is we have quality entertainment like Tough as Nails to get us through. So what's the status on season three? So is casting officially underway? Is it done at this point? Because you just said you're eyeing to shoot in the summer.
Yeah, so we've been doing casting for the last few months. We actually started back in the end of January. And then we've been working on the challenges for the last few months as well. So we're about to go out and pitch those. We have some really good ones lined up. And what's great about it is people are coming to us now with ideas and fans too, by the way. And look, I would love to have people come back from previous seasons, like we did with Rufa Lee and Danny. I'd like to do that more. I love the idea that they come back and there were these returning characters. And the idea is to build a family of characters on Tough as Nails that we can, that are like go-tos, and they can dish out the punishment for a change instead of having to deal with it in the first place. And one of my favorite moments of the whole season was just that Wang Dang Doodle with Rufa Lee. Have I told you that I love Rufa Lee? I probably have. No, I'm kidding.
Never heard about that.
I don't know. Look, I think of him, I smile. I say his name, I smile. I see his face. I hear the words Wang Dang Doodle. I see him stuffing his face with popcorn, and I see a soda pop in his hand, and I see him on a roof somewhere in a beautiful sunset. Rupert Lee.
what a picture.
My panorama.
My love for Rupert Lee extends across all roofs across America.
Yeah. Well, Phil, thank you so much for spending time with us and breaking down everything from the finale of season two. And again, congratulations on all the success with the show.
Yeah, and I hope you were interesting before I got on, because that's the part that my team wants to listen to, that they want to hear me.
No.
So, Phil, we do have to take something up. We do have a tab from all the dinners that you keep walking out on. You're going to have to fill it somehow. So start washing some dishes, Phil. Let's go to
work. Gotta go. I'm really busy. You're taking up a lot of my time.
Mm-hmm. Got another belt to make.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at that beautiful belt. I got to get Murph and Scott's name engraved on that puppy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how exciting.
The title of Tough as Nails. Yeah. But Phil, this is always so great to get to chat with you about all these episodes, and thank you for being so generous with your time. In all seriousness,
well, I actually really enjoy it, and let's do it again soon.
Okay.
And I'm sure I'll be seeing you around the traps somewhere.
Lobster traps?
Yeah.
I'll see you up on a roof somewhere,
yes.
You know, putting in a roof or...
Yeah. Well, Mike and I are going to be doing our burpee push-ups because maybe you want to see us on Tough as Nails Season 3.
I think that before we come back in Season 3, you should try the burpee push-up test and we'll see what number you end up at. Because it will give you some perspective on just how tough some of our contestants are.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, we'll make sure that'll be a thing to check off before
the brutal truth.
No lip service here. I want to score.
Okay. Well, how do we score our own burpee push-up test? We see how many we can do.
No, you have to watch each other do it.
Yes, I have to watch like some poor soul.
Okay,
have to
so
watch
you put the clock on
through burpee push-ups.
So here's how it goes.
Yeah,
you put the clock on.
Okay.
You try to do 10 in 30 seconds. So, Rob, you're watching as Mike does it, right?
Yeah.
So you're counting and you're looking at the time. If Mike does not get 10 in the first 30 seconds, you add up whatever he did in that first, let's say he did 8. When you get to 30 seconds, you then make Mike take a penalty. You write down 8 and you get him to take a penalty. So you write 8 and then you put 0 for the next 30.
Mm.
At the top of the next minute, Mike has got to try to do 9. Let's say he does 7. You write down 7. Now he's got to take a penalty. Coming up to the next minute, you got to try to do 8. If you don't do 8, you take another penalty and so on. The idea is to try to find the sweet spot of how many burpee push-ups you can maintain without taking a penalty. Because when you're taking a penalty, obviously you're not adding up.
What's the penalty?
The penalty is that you get 0 for that round?
Yes. You're okay. Literally waiting for 30 seconds. So you're recovering, but you're not getting any burpee push-ups.
Okay.
So what I would suggest is you try to get 10 in maybe for the first 2 if you can. That's then you got 20 under your belt in the first minute. Now you go into the minute and a half and maybe let's say you get 9 and you take a penalty. Now you try to maintain 9. You've got to keep adding up those numbers.
Okay.
A perfect score is 160.
Holy moly.
Yes.
And you said Michelle got nearly there, right?
No, Michelle was over 100.
Right.
She was 101. Melissa was 116. Linda was over 126. Danny was 128, I think.
All right, Rob, I think we're going to aim for 10.
Yeah.
I think you guys could realistically get 60, 70, maybe.
Okay.
All right.
Phil, did you invent this or is this like a common test?
No, it actually came from our show trainer. Yeah, and he came up. I said to him, what's the best way to test people's physical
brutal truth,
mental strength? And he said, the brutal truth.
Interesting.
Wow. Okay.
That should be really hard.
Yeah, I mean, people should put that on their dating profiles now. Like, forget height and weight. I want to know what's your brutal truth score.
Right. That's sort of a determinant of how good a lover you'll be. If you ever get sent, into, man, that guy, he can burpee push up all night long.
No penalties.
If you ever get sent to prison, oh, you're going to have to cut that out.
Oh, no.
If you ever get sent to prison, and let's be honest, there's probably a pretty good chance based on your behavior, at least one of you. If you ever get sent to prison, know that that's the one exercise that you should be doing while you're spending time in jail. That and reading law books, you know, like at least further your education.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Get fit and further your education. Promise me that if you go to jail, Rob.
All right. Yes.
I promise you have my word, Phil.
And I'll visit you even, like maybe once every 3 or 4 months.
Good. Phil, can you slip a bolt cutter in the cake so I can break my way out of jail?
Cement. Dig it out.
Yeah, I'll bring over a lobster trap. And but like, yeah, no, I've just brought him a little lobster trap. And that'll help you get up and over
lobster.
The wall.
Yeah.
This is getting silly.
All right. Well, Phil, I think you have the first obstacle of Tough as Nails Season 3, a jailbreak challenge, which involves, slide a bolt cutter into the cell. Maybe you want to like drop a slime eel so the guards can't follow you out.
Yes. What, so they'll slip on
it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great deterrent.
You saw how slippery it was with those eels, Mike.
That's true. Yeah, that, especially when they get panicked, they'll just like completely fill up the whole cell with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I like it. Listen, last words of advice: just stay out of jail until at least we get through season three. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You got it, Phil.
Fair deal. Yeah.
Phil, thank you so much.
Thank you, Phil.
We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
Have a good one, Phil.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. All right. There you go, Mike. Wow.
There you go, Phil Kogan.
Didn't think we were going to get the jail advice.
Yeah. And also the prerequisite that we have to do the brutal truth test before we cover season three now. I've experienced like a checklist of things I need to do now, but I'm up for the challenge.
I'm going to go work on it right after we get done with this podcast.
Yeah. I'm going to be taking all the penalties.
Yeah. So
we were in the middle of where are they now, if we want to finish.
Oh yeah, let's get through the couple of last where are they now. Who do we get up to?
So we finished with Zeus. So Tara, remember Tara,
yes,
from Thumbs Okay, she got a job as a towing mate on a vessel in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And she's training to become an officer.
Okay,
so this could be like Captain Tara.
Good,
has a good ring to it. Angel, really interesting with Angel.
Yeah.
First off, Angel gets some gym footage going on, and oh my God, this dude is ripped.
Was he that ripped on the show? I mean, I guess we have some of that shirt on. Yeah,
it looks like he's about to be in a freaking Marvel movie.
I guess so. Angel, I guess, is just like
beams on his abs.
His life is cardio, I guess. But I guess so. Like Angel, you know, it looks like maybe did he get too skinny? Because I'm wondering if Angel might need to take his own advice, and maybe they need to feed Angel.
Feed me! I need more food. I'm hungry.
Yeah, it's got too skinny.
Please, I need protein, please. I also did see, by the way, speaking of following contestants on Instagram, that I believe Angel said that the final team challenge, the difficulty was not only in his back, but apparently he like blew out one of his knees.
Who did?
But Angel did.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so like he'd shown like x-rays, I think, of like his knee cartilage before that. So like he was really hurting by the time that final challenge came around. But seems like he is back up and about in true Angel fashion, but he's also giving back. He's using those abs for good, Rob. He's helping out troubled youth as a mentor and a fitness coach, which is really cool.
Okay, good job, Angel.
And he got to see his son. I thought that was a really cute picture. Meryl adopted her foster daughter and is now writing an autobiography.
I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, Dragon Lady's memoirs. I'm very excited about it, actually, because I think Meryl, I mean, she walked in there, I talked about this before, as like a living legend considering what she's done in her field. And so I think like her story is one I'd really like to know.
Mm-hmm.
Scott has branded himself with Be Better, as we've experienced. I do highly encourage people to follow Scott on TikTok if you want to see what he's up to, because he does a lot of really great stuff on there.
We heard his catchphrase, but I'm wondering, maybe now that he's the champion, he might need to update his catchphrase to Be Best.
Yeah, or at least be the best at Tough as Nails. It doesn't have the right ring to it. But I feel like Scott is always striving to consistently improve himself, right? Even though he is the best, he's like, I want to be place number zero. So constantly being better.
He's going to improve. But maybe he needs to win the All-Stars. That's the only way to be better now.
Winners at war.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess what would it be like? Winners at washer?
I'm not sure.
We're going back.
Maybe they could go to some sort of like army base. They have winners at war.
Oh, I like that. Sort of like
basic training and stuff like that. Yeah. Training.
Maybe it's like half winners and like half newbies. And so they do like basic training.
Yeah. And maybe Murph, because he's a Marine, he sort of like has like a little bit of an advantage. Maybe they have to
Or could Murph just be like an auxiliary role? We talked about this with Roofer Lee last week. Could Murph be like the drill sergeant role, right? Where he just shows up like, all right, maggots, get on up.
Maggots.
Right, I'm sorry, that's how drill sergeants talk to their privates. I think I've seen an officer and a gentleman too many times.
Yeah, I think Roofer Lee might be the pick for the drill sergeant of like, all right, everybody.
Could we have like a good cop and a bad cop with Murph and Roofer Lee?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've got Sarah breaking personal gains at the gym. She was doing some pretty like cool deadlifting, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that she was like a power lifter.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Again, you're
Terminator.
Talking about that power to weight ratio. It seemed like she really had that in spades. Swifty was honored by his union, which is cool. I don't know if it's specifically for his work on Tough as Nails.
Yes.
Like, thank you, Swifty, for being awesome.
The Man of Steel. Yeah.
Exactly. Knuckles is expecting a baby in the fall. I really like that reveal. I thought that that was very sweet.
Baby Knuckles. Because I think the part of her story was that, like, oh, she worked. She was still doing, like, cement work while she was 9 months pregnant.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, hopefully she'll be granted a little bit more leave before baby number two. But congratulations belatedly to Knuckles and Mr. Knuckles and the family. And finally, Freight Train, as Phil mentioned, back to work in shorts. We saw that through, like, someone recorded it on their iPhone, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, maybe it was like, oh, my God, Freight Train from Tough as Nails is here.
Yeah, I do wonder, like, as does his company, you know, how sometimes delivery apps are like, oh, so-and-so is on your way. If they saw, like, oh, Patrick Freight Train is on your way, like, oh, my God, he's coming to my house with my package.
Yeah, I don't get updates on who the driver is going to be on my packages.
I think they need to do that. I think we need to get to know the people behind the uniform. You know, I think Tough as Nails has taught us that. Bold choice for Freight Train to wear shorts in the middle of the winter. I went to high school with those types of kids, Rob. I'm sure you did, of like someone who would always wear shorts no matter what time of year it was.
Yeah, I don't recall that, but that would not be me.
Yeah, I definitely remember in middle school, there were a couple of kids who would like get busted by the principal, forced to go home and actually like change into pants because they were trying to wear shorts in the middle of January and like they couldn't have that on their hands.
Okay. So kudos to Freight Train. Maybe that's where he sort of like started like, hey, I want a job where I could wear shorts year round. I guess law school's out.
Books.
Oh, what about this? UPS driver. Okay.
Yeah, well, then we'll say sorry, Freight Train. There was also an opportunity to become a podcaster as well, if that was the wardrobe mandate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Mike, we've done it. Season two, Tough as Nails, in the books.
It was a pretty climactic season. I will admit, the first four episodes were strange. I think Phil would admit that, right? With everything between Tara...
Got off to a weird start.
Stuff, and then Freight Train, you know, leaving as well. But it did seem like, you know, it was a very likable cast. I continue to say that I think that the cast is the biggest strength of this show. I love getting to see people in careers that we usually don't see on reality TV, personalities we don't really see on reality TV. It's just a really great way to highlight these things. And it makes me so happy in so many ways that the show keeps coming back, because I do think while other competition reality shows maybe either intentionally or unintentionally sort of highlight like the morasses and you know, pitfalls that our society can have when we're pitted against each other, Tough as Nails really does embody like the goodness and the kindness that can exist in the day-to-day activities that we have. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited for Phil and for the audience's sake as well that we're going to have two seasons and hopefully more after that to keep on keeping on.
Okay. All right. Well said, Mike. Congratulations again to everybody behind the scenes at Tough as Nails. Some hardworking people who make a show about the hardworking people that keep this country running. All right, Mike, what's next for you?
Oh, boy. A lot of next stuff for me. I'll like we did last week, I'll go to Jess first, since this is sort of like our final plugs for Tough as Nails, because Jess is still plugging away. Tough as Nails season two may be dead, but Jess is talking about the undead over on Post Show Recaps. She is covering now Fear the Walking Dead. I think it's the second half of season six. So it is her. It is Chappelle. I know they had Josh Wigler on last week, and apparently it produced a moment that Jess said is like comparable to when Phil asked us in the very first episode of We're Survivor Fans in terms of like all-time podcasting moments. So
Whoa. Be
sure to check that out. I do hear, even if you're not a fan of The Walking Dead, they've watched it, so you don't have to. So be sure to check that out. In my own realm, when it comes to Post Show Recaps, of course, Lost Down the Hatch with Josh Wigler. We are finishing up season four, which is certainly a wang dang doodle. The Bloom Files, which is an X-File podcast I do with my wife, Angela Bloom. We are nearing the end of season three, which has truly been off the wall and the roof. So that has been a great time. And then The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is flying into the last couple of episodes. It has been an absolutely banana show so far. And so I cannot even imagine where we're going in these last two episodes. But I do that with Kevin Mahadeo and LaTanya Starks. And then over on the reality TV side of things, if anybody missed it for some reason, you want to hear Rob and I talk more reality TV for 3+ hours. We talked about Survivor Guatemala last week. Of course, Shannon, Gus, and I are talking Survivor South Africa. I just am going to be releasing a deep dive with two contestants that were a lot of fun. But we're looking on the precipice, a month and a half away, Rob, from Survivor South Africa season 8 premiering, the first new televised Survivor season in over a year. Mm-hmm. It is happening. And Shannon, Gus, and I will be there to do some preseason interviews whenever the cast may drop. So that's a lot of fun. And then from a writing perspective, I'm doing exit press for Top Chef and The Circle over on Parade.com. The Circle in particular, I spoke with the contestant or contestants that were eliminated in the first four episodes of this show. I highly recommend people check out The Circle. I think this season in particular is like super cutthroat, but super fun. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for like another reality TV show to hop onto now that Tough as Nails is gone, it is not similar to Tough as Nails whatsoever, but it's a really fun time. And I'm doing exit press with all the contestants as they get eliminated from The Circle at Parade.com.
Yeah. I actually talked about The Circle season two premiere with Taryn Armstrong this week. That's up at robiswebsite.com. That Taryn is going to have a podcast coverage of episodes 2 and 3, and then we'll all be together live for our first weekly roundtable. Talking about The Circle coming up this Saturday. Last night, I talked about Survivor Gabon. I know, one of Mike's favorite seasons. We talked about that with Maggie Morgan and Phil Thompson. Just about 4 hours there on Survivor Gabon, up currently on robhasawebsite.com. Plus, everything going on with Big Brother Canada as well. We'll also have some Twitch Ultimate Trivia coming your way as well on Thursday on a jam-packed week here on Rob Has a Podcast. If you want to get even more involved with everything we have going on in the Rob Has a Podcast community, making fine reality TV podcasts for you, head on over to robhaswebsite.com/patron to get access to our patron podcast feed, where we have extra shows for you to listen to every week, including our weekly Survivor Feedback Show, weekly patron activities, and more at robhaswebsite.com/patron. Thank you so much for listening to our Tough as Nails coverage all season long. Thanks again to Phil for spending so much time with us this season. And take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.